From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. We got a fun show for you today. We do. We got legendary stuntman and movie director Hal Needham joining us later. But first, isn't it exciting, all the pomp and circumstance and romance this weekend? I'm talking, of course, about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was so wonderful when all the chatter about Chuck Todd's gown and Jake Tapper's hair faded away in that dreamlike moment when David Gergen kissed Helen Thomas on the balcony. Call me a sap, I just get all choked up about it. Well, you're all invited guests on our show, so give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is John from Colorado Springs.
Hey, how are things in Colorado Springs?
Well, looks like spring is finally coming out here.
So it's spring in Colorado Springs.
It is.
What do you do there?
I'm an attorney and a business consultant.
I see. Do you do anything rugged?
Well, we raise horses.
You're a lawyer who raises horses?
I do.
Wow. Is there a particularly lawyerly way to raise a horse?
I'm afraid not.
You don't have it sign a release before cantering?
No.
Well, welcome to our show, John. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning. Ms. Faith Saley is here.
Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Next up, a comedian who will be performing at the Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder, Colorado, up the road from you on May 21st. It's Paula Poundstone is here.
Hi, John.
And finally, it's a humorist and the author most recently of Alpha Better Juice, The Joy of Text, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, John.
Hello, Roy.
So, John, welcome to our show. You, of course, are going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that. You'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Sounds like a plan.
Here is your first quote.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness.
That was President Obama, who interrupted your regularly scheduled programming Wednesday morning with a televised press conference devoted to what silliness?
To his birth certificate and its release.
Exactly right. Yes, very good. Completely annoyed that after all this time, everybody was still talking about his birth certificate, the president released it to the press and made a statement carried live on all the networks. So now he can be annoyed at himself. The newly released document does confirm that he was born in Hawaii in 1961, as he has always said, but conservative critics did notice the document is titled 100% Totally Real Birth Certificate, so shut up already. Do you guys... I mean, there's a lot of argument over whether this was a smart move or a foolish move, i.e. a smart move in that he's now ended this and exposed these people, or a foolish move, now he's just feeding the flames and giving in to this pressure.
Now they're calling for the placenta.
The biggest loser in this whole thing, the single biggest loser, I guess, is a conspiracy theorist named Jerome Corsi. He was all set to publish in just a few weeks his guaranteed New York Times bestseller titled Where's the Birth Certificate? It's like the guy who wrote Where's Waldo is announcing the first book, and like Waldo calls a press conference and says, I'm right here. Funny hat, stripey shirt. What's the deal? Donald Trump immediately took credit for the release, saying he was, quote, feeling really good about himself, bringing the total number of people who feel good about Donald Trump all the way up to one.
I just think it's hard to take Trump seriously in all of this, because I've seen the documents from Hawaii, and his next wife was born in Honolulu last week.
All right, John, here is your next quote.
Taxi! Hey, taxi!
That was one of about 500 prisoners who used a long tunnel and taxis to escape from a prison where?
In Afghanistan.
Exactly right. Now, what you heard was one of these prisoners, one of these Taliban fighters, he had been standing around in a prison yard when one of his friends said, hey, come with me. And they climbed down a hole through a 1,000-yard-long tunnel, which was amazingly well-constructed. It had electricity and air conditioning, a food court halfway along. You know, it's falafel, there's Pizza Hut, there's whatever, Sbarro's, they got that over there. And they have one of those moving sidewalks in the tunnel with a sign saying, please stand on the right, flee to the left. So, and when this guy, this is true, this part is true, when he, according to the New York Times, when this guy emerged in a nearby neighborhood, he stood there and said, okay, taxi, got the taxi, went off to the battlefield.
This is like the feel-bad Shawshank Redemption.
Mm. It kind of is. Yeah, they hid the tunnel behind a poster of Rita Hayworth in a burqa. This is true. 3 years ago, 1,200 prisoners escaped from this same prison. So NATO gave the Afghan government tens of millions of dollars to improve security at
Stop
the prison.
Stop up the hole.
No, and they've had success. They have reduced the number of escapees per single incident down to the mid three figures. Isn't that great?
So what did you say? It took 5 months to do that tunneling?
It took a long time. Nobody bothered them while they were doing it.
Well, it's kind of like in Indiana Jones, when they're digging over in a hole, like not too far away. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were just sort of right out there.
And
on the
Nazis never noticed.
Never seemed to.
Yeah.
So this is not uncommon.
All right, very good, John. Here is your last quote.
All I've got to do is get my lines right.
That was someone who did get his lines right, as the world watched on Friday. At what big ceremony?
I guess the wedding.
Yes, the royal wedding. It was, indeed. Yeah, all the American cable channels and network newscasts sent hordes of reporters to London to cover every detail. NBC sent 250 people for the wedding. That may seem like a lot. But it all paid off. At the climax of the ceremony, the 250 people formed a huge human pyramid, five stories tall, so they got a nice aerial shot. One thing we learned this week, even royal weddings have weird uncles. For William and Kate, this is true, it is their crazy Uncle Gary. He is a man who once was photographed by the tabloids doing lines of coke in his mansion, which he called La Maison de Bang Bang. But Gary says he's clean and sober now. He prepped for the royal nuptials, and this again is true, by getting a new tattoo on his lower back and a nice artificial tan.
Can any of these wives still be beheaded? Does that still go on?
I don't think they do that anymore.
Oh, okay.
Do we still have the lawyer on the phone?
Carl, how did John do in our quiz?
John, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail. Congratulations.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for playing, John. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Faith, people complain about the TSA body scanners, but now there's a great new use for them. What?
Finding the right size of clothes.
Exactly right. Huh. A company called My Best Fit is taking two potentially humiliating experiences, going through airport security and trying on jeans, and combining them into a perfect shame hybrid. Here's how it works. They put TSA-style scanners in shopping malls, and before you hit the stores, you get a full body scan to determine your exact measurements. It saves you time when shopping, and you can buy a souvenir photo of your nude body suitable for framing.
You might not appreciate this enough, being a man, because vanity sizing has gone bananas for women. You know, if you buy really, really high-end clothes, a woman could be, say, an 8, and then you go to Old Navy, and you're a negative 000.
You mean you buy things smaller than you.
So these stores know that you're going to, if I try on something that's a smaller size, it makes me feel great about myself. Ah. So I'm more inclined to buy it.
Right. But what's amazing is like your gratitude is a symbol of this. It's like how quickly people's attitudes change. Because you're like, you go into one of these things at the airport, you're like, no way. No way are you invading my privacy, TSA. No way are you taking this surreptitious nude photo of me. Mm-hmm. And then you go into the mall and you're like, oh my God, it'll help me get into jeans that fit. Here, should I take off my clothes? Will that help the machine? What do you need me to do?
Wait a minute, but have people accepted this idea?
Yes.
Or have they just put it out there? Because what I think is a good idea is that you buy jeans at the airport.
Is this why you're always getting in the cab to go to the airport after the show with no pants on?
That's exactly right. I may as well.
Faith, two U.S. wineries, one based in New Jersey and one in California, are going to federal court over a supposed trademark violation. They each want to be known as the wine especially made just for whom?
A box.
No, this is the intended consumer, not the vehicle of delivery. Well, that, but there are two wine companies, one based in California, one based in New Jersey, and they both use the same term in their wine label.
Oh. Just for kids.
Close.
Close? So close, okay. Just for pregnant women.
Mm. You said pregnant women. It's close enough. The answer is mommies. Mommies. It turns out Desperate Housewives isn't just a hit TV show. It's a growing demographic for fine wine. California winery Clos Les Champs Wines claims their brand name, Mommy Juice, is nothing like Mommy's Time Out, the brand of wine sold by the New Jersey company that filed the suit. Both wineries apparently hope to tap into a similar market, terrible mothers. But distributors in New Jersey claim they thought of it first, and they worry similar labels will just confuse the customers who are, of course, already drunk by 3 p.m. Sommeliers describe the wines, the mommy wines, as being full-bodied with subtle hints of diaper and top notes of minivan and sleep deprivation.
No, don't have that. That's mommy's juice.
Thank you, everybody. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Brenda Bowen from New York, New York.
Hey, how are things in New York?
They're stormy.
Stormy?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. What do you do there in New York?
I'm a literary agent for children's books.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I have children, so I've read a lot of children's books recently.
That's good.
What's the next big thing going to be in children's books? Can you tell
me? The next big thing.
The next Goodnight Moon.
The next Goodnight Moon is going to be whatever crosses my desk tomorrow.
Really?
I hope.
Brenda, I have a question about children's books.
Yes,
with all due respect, I sometimes feel about them the way I do about modern art, where you look at it and you go, I could do that.
Like, I bet you do, Faith. And maybe you would like to write a children's book. Ooh.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, you need an agent?
Sure.
There you go.
Thanks, Brenda. I got one about a monkey afraid of the dark.
Well, try it.
I don't think you respect the form, Faith. That's what I think.
I remember once I was cleaning up late at night, I was putting things away, and I came across a book that, I don't know who bought it, but it was a cardboard book called The Book of Shapes. Oof. And I swear to you, it was 6 pages long, and that's because it went as far as oval. And I looked at the cover, and it was co-authored.
Brenda, believe it or not, we're glad to have you with us.
Yes, thank you.
By the way, the books that have sponges in them that go in the bathtub, the text isn't any good at all. Sorry, Brenda.
Thanks, Paul.
Peter's got to explain the rules to you now.
Thank you.
Brenda, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Brenda's topic?
Hands off, Uncle Sam.
The government's there to keep us well-fed, happy, and healthy, and then leave us alone. But some would say lawmakers are now doing more than that, that big government is expanding right into our private lives. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of intrusive regulation. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Faith Saley.
Penny Steiger is the county clerk of Orangeburg County, South Carolina, and she has a PhD in English from Princeton, which might be why she couldn't stand the poorly written, ungrammatical, hackneyed wedding vow she kept hearing in local churches and the historic courthouse. So, starting this month, if you want a marriage license in Orangeburg County, you need to present your wedding vows for approval first, and then be ready for some harsh criticism. Steiger explains, quote, "Here in Orangeburg County, we believe that it's our job to ensure that a lifelong commitment between a man and a woman begins with immaculate grammar and some creativity." This means that Steiger will send draft vows back to young lovers covered in red-inked corrections, and she even suggests literary quotations to brides and grooms. "The most common mistake I see is couples writing, 'between you and I,'" she sighs. "I offer premarital counseling in the objective case."
Your wedding vows must be approved by the county clerk in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Your next story of a big brother butting in comes from Roy Blunt Jr.
"Ain't nobody here but us chickens?" Yeah, right. The voice you hear in the hen houses of Hopewell Township, New Jersey these days is that of Big Brother. This week we learned that Hopewell's town fathers have passed an ordinance limiting the cohabitation rights of local hens and roosters. Only 10 days a year, just enough time for fertilization, may chickens legally hook up in Hopewell Township. Why? Well, supposedly it's a noise issue. At any rate, Hopewell's government is more into cock-a-doodle-don'ts than cock-a-doodle-do's. Because any rooster who crows too loud during his conjugal visit will be banned for 2 years. I know, old cock, whispers Henrietta at last after so long. I know. And you were great, but shh.
Hopewell, New Jersey, puts unreasonable limits on the love life of chickens. Your last story of government intrusion comes from Paula Poundstone.
The town of Ballin, Florida, has changed its name to Smile, Florida, and claims to be the dental hygiene capital of the world. Dentist and mayor Dr. Damon Vasquez enthusiastically led the drive. They launched a huge campaign to encourage good dental hygiene, which includes visits from multiple Mr. Happy Tooth characters. Not all smilers, however, are smiling about it. They're not visits, they're unsolicited checkups that trample all over our rights to privacy, claims Tim Becker. I bought a Google cluster at the Kroger last Tuesday, and 2 hours later, some Nazi dressed as an incisor shows up at my door. 22-year-old Christmas Village clerk Nancy Ross says it used to be a fun idea, but it has gone too far. If a cop pulls you over and you don't smile, they can become suspicious and check your teeth. These issues call for balance, says a day trader named Junior who asks that we not use his last name and pretends to be toothless to keep the powers that be off his back. And I'm not sure that having the government measure your floss strikes that balance.
All right, then. Here are your choices. From Faith Saley, an overzealous county clerk in South Carolina who has to approve wedding vows before she'll issue a license. From Roy Blood Jr., the city fathers of Hopewell, New Jersey, putting limits on the love lives of chickens in that town. Or from Paula Poundstone, a repressive dental regime in the newly renamed town of Smile, Florida. Which of these is the real story of government overreach?
Well, Roy was the only one who was nice to me during the introduction.
Aha! There we
go. Oh, no.
And he read it so poignantly that I'm going to have to go with Roy.
All right. You're going to choose Roy's story of Hopewell, New Jersey, limiting the sex lives of chickens. Well, we spoke to somebody who actually was involved in this governmental action.
What we decided was that they could have roosters, but only 5 days in a row and only twice a year.
That was John Hart. He is a farmer in Hopewell, New Jersey, who sits on that town's agricultural advisory committee that passed the chicken ordinance. Congratulations, Brenda. You got it right.
Thank you.
You earned a point for Roy. You've won our prize. Carl Castle recorded the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brenda. Bye-bye.
There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us.
And now the game where we ask people who do important things about stuff that just doesn't matter. You have seen Hal Needham hundreds, if not thousands of times, although you didn't know it was Hal. He was jumping off buildings or driving cars off bridges, being dragged behind horses. He is the king of the Hollywood stuntman and became a movie director in his own right. He's got a new book out about his life and career called Stuntman. We are pleased to have him join us now. Hal Needham, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to have you. So you got into stunt work back in the 50s, was it? Was that when you started, or even earlier?
Right, in 1956.
And how did you get started in that business?
The first movie I worked on was called The Spirit of St. Louis. It was a story of Charles Lindbergh's life.
Yeah.
And I had some experience as a wing walker and a paratrooper and things.
Really? So it's like they're standing in the set saying, anybody here willing to stand in this wing while the fly's up in the air? And you're like, okay.
My part, there was a guy standing on top, but I had to climb down to the wheels, then down to a ladder about 14, 15 rungs, and hang by my ankles while they flew over the cameras.
Mm. Right. And they asked
where
you
was the stunt? When did the stunt part happen?
Yeah. You have to prove yourself to break in as a stuntman. Was that the one that made everybody realize this guy can really do it, or was there something even more spectacular?
No, you know what? It's a slow process. Here's the thing that I think really pushed me over was my versatility, because when I came into the movie business, all the stuntmen were specialists. If you did horse work, that's all you did. If you did cars and motorcycles, you did that. Well, when I came in, I taught myself how to do everything.
Right. So you can, like, drive a car while riding a horse.
Hal, how many bones have you broken?
56, including my back. I broke my back twice and 56 bones and knocked out a few teeth.
Sure. Well, who hasn't? I do that in public radio. now, you became known, you were the stunt double for Burt Reynolds in a bunch of movies.
Oh, I doubled Burt for 18 years.
Wow. So he was your... It must be weird, like, doubling for somebody all that time. You must get to know him pretty well.
Well, I got to know him well enough that when my wife kicked me out of the house, he invited me over to live in his guest house, and I lived there for...
That's a friend.
Yeah.
So you hung a lot with Burt Reynolds.
I doubled him for 18 years, as I said, and then... I didn't live over in his guest house for 12, so I knew him pretty well. As a matter of fact, you know, he was number one box office star in the world, and it was him that gave me the opportunity to become a director.
Yeah, you directed him in Cannonball Run.
My first movie I directed with him was Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, you were responsible for that, right?
Yeah, I did.
And this was before they had, like, computer-generated effects. So when your cars went flying up in the air, spin around...
They're flying times, through the air.
They're actually flying through the air.
You know what? I hate that junk.
Do you really?
You see a guy jump off of a 250-foot dam into a puddle of water or something, and he bobs up like a damn duck out there coming up, you know? And I go, wait a minute. They've lost me. When they start doing the impossible, then they lose me, and... I've walked out of many shows because of it.
I want to ask you one last question. You mentioned directing the movie Cannonball Run. That's the movie with Burt Reynolds and a big cast about a sort of pirate cross-country race. I'm told that is actually based on a real thing. Is that true?
Wait a minute. I did that show.
You did that?
The guy that I did that run. The guy that created the race was Brock Yates. And he told me about it, and I said, you're kidding. I said, boy, that sounds like making of a movie. So he and I decided to run the race. We had 46 contestants in it, and he and I drove an ambulance. We took a van and made an ambulance out of it.
So the idea was that this is a race from one coast to the other, east coast to west coast, was it?
From Darien, Connecticut to Long Beach, California.
Right.
Go any way you want to, and whoever did it in the least amount of time was a winner. And my ambulance would run 150 miles an hour, and... Brock's wife volunteered to be our patient. We put her in the back in a gurney.
How many times were you stopped?
Once.
Once?
Just once. What happened? We got stopped in Pennsylvania by the highway patrol.
Yeah.
And the guy said, where are you heading? I said, California. He said, why? I said, well, got a sick lady in the back. And he said, what's wrong with that? I said, you'll have to ask the doc. So we walk around, and he talks to the doctor, just like in the movie. And the policeman said, why you got to go to California? He said, she's got a lung disease. He said, why didn't you fly? I said, oh, we can't even take the northern route. It's too high. We got to go to the south, you know? They turned us loose. One time in Kansas, we had the CB radio on, and traffic was getting heavy, and I heard the chatter. There was a rodeo letting out up ahead of us.
Yeah.
So I got on the CB, and I said, anybody out there got your ears on? I said, this is the meat wagon. We're coming through. We got a patient and things or whatever. So give us a little leadway. A voice came back on and said, this is Officer so-and-so, and he says, I'm controlling the traffic up here, and I got him stopped, son. Come on through, you know?
Well, Hal Needham, we're delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
I do. Oh, yes, my prince. I do.
It's Royal Wedding Week.
Yeah.
We're going to ask you three questions about the royal weddings of the past, taken from the book royal weddings, a very peculiar history.
Some questions from royal weddings of the past?
Yes, these are questions about royal weddings of the past.
Okay, go. I don't know anything about it, but try me.
That's the whole point. These questions are taken from a book called Royal Weddings, a Very Peculiar History by Fiona MacDonald. So the idea is you answer 2 out of 3 correctly, or even 3 out of 3. Do that, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Hal Needham playing for?
Hal is playing for Cassandra Barrington Harness of Oxford, England.
I hope she doesn't need this, whatever the gift is.
Yeah. Let's hope she doesn't have her hopes up. All right.
Go ahead.
First question. Now, many times in the past, the royal groom did not meet the royal bride until just before the wedding. So what did King Charles II of England say when he first gazed upon his bride, Catherine, in 1662? A, quickly, men, lower the veil. B, they have sent me a bat. Or C, and you must be Catherine's father? Ooh. Ooh.
I'd say number 3, and you must be Catherine's father.
It would have been polite. No, it was actually B, the bat comment. They've sent me a bat. The bat comment apparently was not so much her appearance, but her dress, which had these
large... Well, I see. You're way beyond me. Go ahead.
All right. Still too many chances here. It was tough for the bride, too, in those days. In 1736, Princess Augusta of Saxe-Gotha-Altenburg was shipped off to England at the tender age of 16 to marry the Prince of Wales. She was so nervous upon meeting the royal family that she did what? A, she lied and pretended to be somebody else. B, she took one look at her future husband and started screaming, "Devil, devil," in German. Or C, she vomited upon the queen.
She vomited on the queen.
That's right, she vomited all over the queen. This actually pleased her husband-to-be, who hated his mother, and they had a very happy marriage. Last question. The greatest royal wedding of all, of course, Charles and Diana, 1981. The couple had only been together 13 times before the prince proposed, and soon after that, the couple was asked on TV if they were in love. Diana said, "Of course." And the prince responded by saying, what? A, quote, "That's not actually necessary." B, quote, "Whatever love means." Or C, quote, "I'd hit that."
What was the last one?
"I'd hit that."
I'll take that.
You're going to take that one?
Yeah.
You're gonna choose. I just love this. Being interviewed on live television, the young Prince Charles is asked, "Are you in love?" And he turns to his lovely young 19-year-old bride and he says, "I'd hit that." That's your choice?
Why not?
I can't think of a reason why not. I'm gonna let you do that. Sadly, the answer was B, "Whatever love means," he said.
Oh well, okay.
That's all right. But I wish you were right, is all I can say. Carl, how did Hal Needham do in our quiz?
Well, Hal had just one correct answer, Peter, but he needed 2 to win for Cassandra Barrington Harness.
I knew she was in trouble.
Yeah, well. Hal Needham is a director, stuntman, and author of the great new book, Stuntman, which has more stories than you could ever possibly believe. Hal Needham, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, hi, Hal. Hi, thank you.
And I might fall from a tall building, so but Reynolds don't get hurt, because I'm the unknown stuntman that made a lover out of the bird.
In just a minute, after months of speculation and talk of conspiracy, Carl finally releases his rhyme certificate. It's a listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions about the week's news. Faith, this week, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour announced he would not be running for president, despite the fact that he'd assembled a staff, decided not to do it. Turns out there had been some clues he wasn't going to pull the trigger. For example, after a recent speech in South Carolina, Governor Barbour did what?
You exhausted my entire Haley Barbour knowledge when you said that he announced he wasn't going to run.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a hint, please.
Well, he lied about the powdered sugar that was seen on his face. He said it was cocaine.
That's a hint?
That's kind of a hint.
That sounds like an answer.
No, he had powdered sugar in his face because he had
Eating a donut.
Ooh. That's how people knew he wasn't going to run. Let me explain.
Please.
So last month, Haley Barbour, who is what political insiders call big boned, told supporters he had already lost 20 pounds and that he hoped to lose 20 more by the end of this month. This, people assumed, was his effort to avoid having to use the presidential campaign slogan, fat as Taft, but still alive. So, when he was seen eating a donut, we knew his bid was over before it began.
He said he didn't have the fire in the belly.
No, it had been doused by the donuts.
You know, although if I were to run for president, I would want to lose weight. But eating a donut would not mean that I wasn't going to run for president. It would just mean that my fantasy that I'll be able to work that off has grown even bigger.
I see.
It is the most American of things, you know? It's a very patriotic thing to do, to eat a donut. It's not like he's having a bagel.
Yes. clearly, though, the presidency has lost some of its allure. It's like, huh, I could be the most powerful man in the world, but this donut does have jelly inside. Roy, in a groundbreaking study, scientists pinpointed the area of the brain responsible for embarrassment. To do the tests, they needed a foolproof way to induce embarrassment in human subjects. So how did they do it?
Well, is it like some kind of naked thing?
No. Some of the subjects prior to the test actually thought their rendition of Don't Stop Believin' was pretty good.
Oh, did karaoke.
Exactly, let them sing karaoke. Specifically, made the test subjects listen to themselves singing karaoke of the classic Temptations hit, My Girl.
My girl.
And just to maximize the humiliation, they played it back to the subjects without the backing music. Yeah, you're all shuddering. Experts say the research proves two things. Embarrassment is tied to a specific region of the brain, and researchers are just mean. While the subjects watched their performances, scientists tested their embarrassment levels by physically probing them, finally answering the question, what could possibly make karaoke worse than it already is? Roy, Major League Baseball took over the Los Angeles Dodgers last week, as you may know, because the owner, Frank McCourt, was not showing what you would call fiscal responsibility.
Right.
Among the details that came out in the flurry of lawsuits is that McCourt and his then-wife paid someone $100,000 a year just so he'd be ready in case the couple, at a moment's notice, needed him to do what?
In case they wanted to, I don't know, put on a fashion show. I don't know. What? In case they wanted to...
Well, they put him on permanent retainer, or as it's known in the business, perm retainer.
Oh, in case they wanted to have their hair redone.
Exactly right. You never know
when
you're going to need an urgent haircut. Well. The McCourts paid hairdresser David Mackey $300 a day just to stand by with scissors waiting for an end to split. Mackey, apparently unsatisfied with the most nappable job available outside of air traffic controller, is now suing the McCourts because they allegedly failed to pay him for November and December of 2009. He says if he wasn't going to be paid, he could have sat around doing nothing instead of diligently sitting around doing nothing.
Wow.
Frank McCourt's hair was not very dramatic, as I recall.
Well, that's why.
That's because he had somebody always on call.
Exactly.
Every time it started to do something interesting, this guy...
Precisely.
Exactly.
That's how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have my man right there, I'd be frizzed up right now.
I don't know what he did. I mean, did he stand there at the side of their house waiting with scissors?
He just made an intimidating snipping noise.
Mm-hmm. He was going like this with his razor, stuff like that.
Stropping
his razor.
Is that what that's called?
That's what that's called.
Huh. Stropping.
Yeah.
Then where does the phrase, oh, she's so stroppy, come from?
That's something you just made up. I've never heard it before in my life.
You haven't either. It's British.
Yeah.
A stroppy cow?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been applied to me.
A stroppy cow?
Yes. If a woman's stroppy, she's,
they insult her cow?
Actually,
feisty.
I had no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
So, yeah.
It's like a feisty woman.
Yeah, I mean, she...
She's stroppy.
She wants to hit you with a strop.
Yeah. Stroppy cow?
Uh-huh.
Say it all the time now. Can't wait to call my kids. What do you mean you didn't do your homework, you stroppy cow?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and check out the latest How to Do Everything from the producers of Wait Wait. This week, how to choose the best dog food. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, who's this?
Teresa Reed.
Hey, Teresa, where are you calling from?
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh, Ann Arbor's a beautiful place. We got some
it
people
is.
From there. What do you do there?
I'm the director of an initiative at the University of Michigan called Art Engine.
Art Engine?
Yeah, it's the deans of the schools of art and music and engineering and architecture are working together to integrate art making into the university as a whole.
Oh, okay, that's cool too. I thought you were putting engines on paintings, and I thought that would be excellent.
Yeah, no.
Well, welcome to the show, Teresa. Carl Castle is now going to perform for you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
Ready.
Here's your first limerick.
The economy used to be plundered bare. Now we're tracking an upswing with wondered stares. The market, it knows what we've got neath our clothes. The trend is up when we buy.
Chair?
Not chairs.
Say it again.
Here, yes, all right. Carl, you'd better say it again.
Yeah, I will.
Say it again.
I will. The economy used to be plundered bare. Now we're tracking an upswing with wondered stares. The market, it knows what we've got neath our clothes. The trend is up when we buy.
Oh. It's neath our clothes.
Neath our clothes.
Hair?
No.
It's, wait.
Oh, wait a minute. All of a sudden, wondered stares.
It's something Paris Hilton forgets
underwear.
To wear.
Underwear.
Underwear. Please, oh, man. Thanks. Thanks, you guys.
Underwear is riding up. Well, at least underwear sales are. And that, according to Alan Greenspan's Underwear Index, we've reported on this on the show before, it's good news for the U.S. economy. Greenspan theorized that people skimp on new underwear in lean times because, seriously, who's going to see it? Especially when all you can afford to offer your dates is half your Taco Bell chalupa. Mm. All right.
Okay.
Well, that was easy. Let's do number two.
Oh, yeah.
Of boys' names, not one could be sweeter. And he's tops on the CEO meter. Successful young breeders give names to our leaders. They do well if they call their boys...
Cheaters?
No.
Gosh.
It's a name.
Oh. Paula.
No, Paula doesn't rhyme. Let's hear this one just one more time. Here we go.
Okay, one more time.
It's a name.
Of boys' names, not one could be sweeter. And he's tops on the CEO meter.
Oh.
Successful young breeders give names to our leaders. They do well if they call their boys...
Peter.
Yeah. Apparently, if you want your son to become a CEO, name him Peter. It's foolproof. That's the helpful advice from a new survey of LinkedIn statistics. It finds that that is Peter, the most common name among CEOs. So name your son Peter, and he'll either rocket right to the top of corporate America or have just one more thing to feel bad about.
Peter?
Yes?
Isn't that your name?
Why, Paula, so it is. And yet here I am.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO of nothing in particular. All right, here is your last limerick.
Okay.
It's really no gym for the prude. Because the squats here can be rather lewd. As we try to get thin, we show only skin. At this gym, we work out in the...
Nude.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're uncomfortable, you know, going to the gym and, like, grabbing the handle of the elliptical machine after the sweaty guy is done with it, you will absolutely want to avoid the stationary bikes at Easy Gym, nudist gym in Spain's Basque region. Membership lagged during the recession. The gym's owners came up with a quick solution, naturist workout sessions. So far, response has been lukewarm. Only five people showed up to the first session. Perhaps due to this logical conundrum, the people who most need to work out are the people you least want to see nude. Carl, how did Teresa do in our quiz?
Teresa, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Yes, you did. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for playing, Teresa.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Teresa.
Bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roy Blunt Jr. has 3 points. Faith Saley has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right. So, Paula, you are absolutely in third place, so you're going to start our quiz.
I think you could have worded that differently.
Paula, the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Alabama and 5 other states across the South were hit by dozens of blank late Wednesday.
Tornadoes.
Yes. President Obama announced this week that Leon Panetta would take over at the Pentagon, and General Petraeus would take over Panetta's spot at the blank.
CIA.
Right. Gabrielle Giffords traveled to Florida this week so she could watch her husband's upcoming blank launch.
Space launch.
Space.
Ship. Space. What is it?
How about space shuttle?
Space shuttle.
Yeah. Responding to suggestions from consumers, makers of the popular 100-calorie snack packs have agreed to blank.
Increase the calories.
Exactly. Riot police in France are threatening to strike following a new ban preventing them from blanking.
Rioting.
No, drinking on duty.
Oh.
French officials weren't happy about riot police in body armor caught drinking beer and wine during a Paris Street protest, so they said, that's it, no more booze. A spokesman for police says officers are outraged and that no one should object to a little drink on the job, and watch me open this beer with my gun. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
All right.
I've set the bar kind of high.
We've flipped a coin. Faith has elected to go second. Fill in the blank, please. The dollar fell on Wednesday after the press conference held by Federal Reserve Chairman Blank.
Ben Bernanke.
Right. Britain announced that it could deploy troops to Tunisia to guard refugees fleeing from Gaddafi's regime in Blank.
Libya.
Right. The law firm hired by Republicans to defend the federal law banning blank quit on Monday.
The Defense of Marriage Act.
Yes. A Minnesota sales manager and father of 3 was chosen to replace Gilbert Gottfried as the voice of the blank.
Aflac.
Right. A hazmat team in Ann Arbor responding to a report of potentially harmful gases arrived in the scene and found blank.
Flatulent cows.
Flatulent man. Thousands of children converged in the south lawn of the White House Monday for the annual blank.
Easter egg.
Yes. A study released on Thursday shows that humans may be catching leprosy from infected blanks.
Armadillos.
Yes. When a bank teller refused to comply with a stick-up note, a bank robber in Queens angrily told him blank.
But you're my dad.
No. The bank robber said, well, I'll take my business elsewhere then. Harold Lucan attempted to rob the Bank of America in Queens. He was outraged when the teller refused to comply with his demands. Then he made the ultimate threat. Okay, I will go to Citibank. I will rob them instead. The teller was unmoved, and Lucan was arrested before he made it to Citibank.
No customer service.
None. Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz?
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Faith Saley has the lead.
Well done. How many, then, does Roy Blunt Jr. need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right. Roy, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. The International Monetary Fund projected this week that China will overtake blank as the world's largest economy by 2016.
The United States.
Yes. Because of Syria's crackdown on protesters, Britain withdrew the Syrian ambassador's invitation to the blank.
Royal wedding.
Right. In an interview with People magazine, Katie Couric confirmed that she is leaving her anchor job at blank.
CBS.
Right. Ceremonies took place in Ukraine on Tuesday to mark the 25th anniversary of the nuclear disaster at blank.
Chernobyl.
Right. A judge in Chicago dismissed a potential juror in the retrial of former Governor Rob Blagojevich because she had blank.
She had his name written all over her notebook.
No. A ticket to one of Oprah's final shows. New Jersey's Secretary of State ruled this week that former Olympic star blank is not eligible to run for state senate there.
Carl Lewis.
Right. Police in India were called in to investigate after officials at a bank in Lucknow discovered blank.
People in a bank in Lucknow?
Yes.
Discovered there... Where is Lucknow? There was no money in it. Not a single drachma or whatever.
No. They discovered that termites had eaten 10 million rupees.
Ooh.
The currency notes had been in a steel bank chest in January, but when officials opened it all, they discovered it was a gang of fat and happy termites. To give you a sense of the scale, that's a $200,000 meal for termites. It's almost as bad as shopping at Termite Whole Foods.
Mm.
Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
Roy needed at least 6 to tie, but Roy had 5 correct answers. So with 15 points, Faith Saley.
Congratulations,
this week's
Faith.
Champion.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, now that he's released his birth certificate, what will be the next things that President Obama reveals. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. Chase offering the Marriott Rewards Premier Credit Card. Details at marriottpremier.com/radio. And Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Nick Park. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will President Obama reveal next? Faith Saley.
In a bold move, Obama is going to choose the star of Trump's show Celebrity Apprentice, Meatloaf, as his 2012 running mate and run as Obama Loaf, the other white meat.
Paula Poundstone.
A small but vocal group called Teapotters, who insist that Obama is a teapot, finally annoy him enough to get him to reveal his full body scan to prove once and for all that he is not short, stout, does not have a handle nor a spout, and even when steamed up, will not shout.
Poetic. And Roy Blunt Jr.
Photographs will be brought out from the 70s in which, bizarrely enough, Obama's hair looks a lot like Donald Trump's. Great, great.
Well, if President Obama reveals any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Faith Saley, Paula Poundstone, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. You've been fabulous. We'll see you again next week. This is NPR.